You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, good morning. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is the number you can text or call. You can also email me anytime, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can become a friend of the show by getting onto breadboxmedia.com, finding friend of the show, clicking to me, Dr. Michelle, and the show, Dr. Michelle Live, and follow the links from there. You can also check out all the old, I always say old, and they're just so not old. They just, those parts of us that we talk about never change. We always have these thoughts of what are we going to do in our lives, either for ourselves or our loved ones. And as we take these twists and turns in life, they're all really pretty same song, different verse. So you can do that by going on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. So lots of ways to take a look, lots of ways to get a hold of me and to get a hold of us, to get a hold of Breadbox Media. Take a look at the other contributors as well. So we have a lot of good things going on, and it's all about you. It's all about you, because when it's about you, it's about me. And when it's about me, it's about everyone else I know. So everything that we do is a thread in the tapestry of life. So when you go to make an appointment with your doctor or your nail salon person or your child's teacher, you're there for a reason, but you're not there for one reason. God never has that happen in life, ever. The flower I'm looking at right now, which is a beautiful lavender pinkish flower, daisy looking thing, it is enlightening my eyes. I have rods and cones in my eyes that can see this color. Some of you don't. Some of you don't have that. You were born without them. So you still see the flower. And you've learned that whatever it is that you see that I don't experience is the color pink or red or reddish. But most of us, or those of us that can see the color, and my purple won't be the same as your purple. My pink won't be the same as your pink. However, we exist to see this flower. At the same time, we don't exist just to see that flower. That flower did not come up so that I could look at it, although it's fulfilling that purpose and it's bringing me joy. Does it know it's bringing me joy? I really don't know, but I don't think it has the knowledge we know it. It knows it because it's a creature of God. It's a living creation. What else does it do? It holds the ground together. It puts roots down into the ground, and there are little microbes and little bugs and all kinds of bacteria, which are microbes, and all kinds of things that feed off the roots or help nourish the roots, or gives a little tunnel system for the water that comes through, so it doesn't just run off the dirt and all their little inorganic or organic molecules in the dirt. So there's all kinds of things that it does. It provides external housing for all kinds of creatures and situations and joys and food for the other kinds of larger animals that might come on the outside. I could go on forever about this one little daisy that somebody at some place at some time either thought, or some bird flew over, or somehow this plant got here. And somebody thought, hey, that might look good on this little hill. And it's almost being swallowed up by weeds as I'm looking at this hill, but it's there. And every once in a while, a finch will come and just sit on it while it's looking around for its little food. So we are like that. We are the lilies of the field. We aren't just, we just don't look at them and say, well, yeah, look how good God takes care of those things. So therefore we should have faith. We also have to see that it is, we are so a part of this fabric, and the fabric would go on without us. Absolutely. But the fabric is different since we've been here. Take a look at your kitchen towels. If you have, let's say, roosters on them or apples or some kind of scene or some kind of pattern. If it was just a plain old taken out of the ground, woven up, whatever fiber it is, or designed in a laboratory, it would still be a towel. But it wouldn't be fulfilling a whole bunch of different purposes. Let's say it has the Eiffel Tower on it, and it spurs some little kid as you're taking out your muffins. It spurs them to think, interesting. And they either start drawing shapes like that, or they become interested, or somewhere along the line, without relating it back to that towel, they have a little light bulb goes off when they see a picture of, let's say, the Eiffel Tower, or a long, thin, slightly curved triangle. Perhaps that makes them draw certain things, or they see it in their minds in a wave form as far as music goes, or they see it in the physics world. I mean, really, I'm telling you, we are getting way too compartmentalized. Way too compartmentalized. That's why I went back to the humors. And one of you asked me to go further into the humors. And they said, this was great. They had heard one of the programs. This was great. Really loved it. But I would love for you to go more into it, more into balancing them, more into what happens with our combinations, more into how that affects relationships. So we are going to do some of that today. This is only one program, and it is a Friday. So I want to leave you with some good feelings for Friday and for the weekend, because there are some not so good things I do want to talk about at some point here. I'm going to bring up the subject matter, and we can actually, as I bring them up, when we start talking more about the four temperaments, I also want to talk about Hildegard von Bingen. You all know who she is, maybe. I didn't really know she was like a saint until a few years ago. I thought, wow, she's a really interesting oddball. And then I realized that she was a Christian mystic, that she was in the monastic world, that she was a scholar, a playwright, a musician, a philosopher, a herbalist, a doctor, basically. She was a true, in the medieval times, she was a true Renaissance woman, where she did a lot of different things and came up with a lot of interesting theories about sexuality, about humanity, and about the four temperaments, drawing from Hippocrates, and there, even before Hippocrates and Aristotle and all that came after that, Galen, all the ancients. So I find that wonderful, fascinating, exciting, awe-inspiring, mysterious. But I also find that I want to bring it almost as when you're going out on a picnic out in a park and you just throw out your blanket. I want to put this out as a blanket because we are getting so compartmentalized. The things that I wanted to discuss, and you can look them up if you like, but they're pretty down. They're downers. They're just like, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm getting down about this. And I know the contexts. Things where now there's just a rash that came out of a couple of articles. But then their Good Housekeeping is doing something on it. Marie Claire is doing something on it. These big, big magazines that you see at the airports and in grocery stores, mainly for women. And YouTube's done a thing. And there's so many different places. And I will look to see where this has originated when I do a program on this next week. But it's all about, you know, being brave enough to say how much you regret having children. And I'm mind boggled when I see this, when I see how the viewpoint, when I see the perspective from the narrowness of the vision from which this is being showcased, we're taking an instant in time. You wake up with a headache, let's say, and your eyes are all foggy and you're feeling depressed. You stumble, you stub your toe, you do all these things. We could take right that and say, gee, your life really sucks. Well, but we know that that's something that just happens. And sometimes it all happens at once and we feel terrible. And then we might fall down and get a big lump in on our eye. And we're supposed to be going to some important business meeting that night and we need to look our best and we don't. Or, you know, we start having a rash all over us. Whatever happens, we don't just stop living. Because we have, and I know that all sounds so trite because it goes away so quickly, but our life is a series. And one look at these old ancient temperaments tell you that you go through the ups and downs. You go through these different temperaments. You may be more or less for your whole life, one or mostly a combination of maybe all four, and infinite combinations, adding in these different things as we branch out into life. But who you are today does not predict who you are tomorrow. You cannot predict that. And yet that's something that we're taking snapshots in time and making lifelong predictions. That also went hand in hand with an article out of the Netherlands with yet another department of euthanasia that came up in the Netherlands. But we're going to talk mostly about these temperaments, you, your relationships, what that means for your physical and mental health, and how to balance those temperaments when we come back after the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
If you like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support today. Thank you. Listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Dr. Michelle, and you are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. And, you know, I just got so confused this morning because I was asked to go back into those temperaments and to maybe go a little deeper, dive a little deeper, talk a little bit more about the balance and how to balance them and how we look at ourselves. And the joy that I have in opening up and getting excited about these things, because I think any tiny little key, like those little keys that we used to have, gosh, I don't know if they still make them. Those little diaries, used to be able to get them everywhere for little girls. And they had these little keys and they had, you know, all you had to do was just pull them out real fast and you could read everyone's diary, but these little tiny diaries. And I think mine was Aqua anyway. But those little keys open up the truth. And sometimes it takes something a little obscure, such as looking at something from Hippocrates. And I'm telling you that modern medicine utilizes these concepts. We just don't call them that. And so does modern personality inventories. Where do you think the Myers-Briggs and all these things kind of branched off from? All the thoughts about archetypes and a lot of psychology is coming from this very, very concept, which is the four, well, they divided them then into five, but the four temperaments, which correspond with the four elements, earth, wind, fire, and air, which corresponds with the certain bios and which corresponds with certain colors. That sounds so new agey, but why don't we take it and say new agey stuff has co-opted those thoughts, just like they did with Ayurvedic medicine. Ayurvedic medicine is not just some crazy thing that came out of nowhere from the new age health food stores or the New Age writing and philosophies. No, Ayurvedic medicine is hugely ancient. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of years old. And it goes not on humors necessarily, but it does all these ancient medicines, which some people will look at and say, oh, it's crazy, it's of the devil. No, a lot of these things were people of the day with the tools they had at the day and the observations they had of the day and the communications systems they had of the day and where they happened to live on the earth made sense. It all worked. They didn't know down in the deserts of the Southwest in North America about wasabi, because wasabi grew, I think, in Japan, in icy cold running water, and it was a root. Well, they didn't have that here. We didn't have that, but we had other things. So we need to look at the balance. But before the break, the reason I got so confused is that I do want to talk about these things, because I think you really need to wake yourselves up. I need to wake myself up even more. But I think you do, because I had a very early morning conversation, 6 o'clock in the morning, Pacific time, with someone who is now having trouble with a teenager who has been on at least 4 powerful psychotropic medications since they were about 5 years old. And this child has no real known illness other than ADHD, because they couldn't sit still, little boy. And now, as a teenager, being called into the office, the school office, because of behavior problems. However, during the summertime, when they just decreased the medication themselves, the child didn't exhibit these problems. School started in, afraid they wouldn't be able to do the school work, be a little disruptive in class, increase these powerful medications, behavior problems. And yet somehow the whole concept of the medicine and its effect is being overlooked. So we tend to just, we're so good at focusing, except for me. I can be very unfocused, as you all know. So can many of us, but we have to focus our energies. And sometimes we're very easily focused. The light beam is getting narrow. It's more like a little laser now. If you've ever seen a cat with Jennifer, I'm sure you've done this with your cats. Jennifer loves cats. With my cats, those little lasers that you can get, little red laser lights, and then you just start wiggling it around, man, that cat will ignore everything else to get after that tiny little red dot of light. And sometimes we do the same. So I really wanted to go into these crazy things, but I'll just have to wait. But Marie Claire, inside the, I'm just going to give you the headlines, the growing movement of women who wish they'd never had kids, that it is unthinkable and unspeakable, but women all over the world are coming forward to say it. I regret having my children. I almost want to vomit when I see this. And not because some people, I mean, there's a wide range of humanity out there. Some people do. And I would say to you, if you're in front of me, I will have compassion for you. So it's not that they're bad people, but the reasons they start to give are very short-sighted reasons, because no one is saying, look, I went through the same thing. No one's saying to them, hold on, baby. Yeah, there's a time where you think if you say big truck one more time, you're going to explode. And Just hold on. And here's some little outlets that might be able to help. Instead, the person is there left with their explosion. And we're not talking about postpartum depression or anything like that. Or they see on YouTube, or they see somewhere else, or their Facebook friends. Everybody's, oh, so happy with their babies. Their babies, oh, so happy. And they're always clean, scrubbed, and lovely. And no one gets to see behind the Facebook picture of vomit and snot and tired. And just when you think, and you just happen to not sleep that night because you wanted to stay up and watch something on TV. And you thought, I'll make it up a little bit in the morning. And then the child gets up way early. Then they have a fever and you have to go in. You can't get in. And you're just like you want to tear your hair out. And you look at yourself in the mirror and you think, I used to have a figure. I used to have a nice looking face. I used to have hair that looked decent. And now I'm ragged. I live for these babies or this baby. That's normal for someone to say to you, just like you should say to your five-year-old boy, it's kind of normal they're wiggly. You know, that's normal. There are points and parts where there are abnormal things. That's where you start going down the avenues. Yeah, but this isn't quite right. And you go to your experts and you know, to good experts. But this is getting kind of, it's becoming a thing and a movement. And that's what gets scary because people are impressionable. So that was just for Marie Claire. We have so many other things about this particular quote movement. And I know it's probably just a fad that's going to start coming along, but you know what? People start, I mean, it's on Bravo TV. It's in Good Housekeeping. There's just Facebook has this, all these, there's like big followings. So let's talk about the difference between words are powerful. There's a one word of saying, I'm ready to rip out my hair and go screaming into the night. And I totally regret having children. Something very, very different. We also have some other news coming out of, this one was from the New York Times in the health section, coming out about some new legislation that's being, I don't know if they call it legislation, but that's being proposed in the Netherlands, which was the first really accepted place for assisted for euthanasia. And they, before they even stopped calling it euthanasia. But this is for just older, lonely people, that if you think your life's not worth living, that's cool. Now, it's not passed yet, but it's the fact that it's even there. The fact that we're not looking at the reverse of it. We're not looking at it from another perspective. And going back to the temperament idea, we're not looking at it and saying, yes, this is a stage of life where if nature had its way, there would be family around, friends around, to ameliorate and add balance to a natural, more melancholic state, let's say, in life. And then you have the caloric state or the sanguine state of younger people, the younger generations. Well, if you don't have that, but all throughout history, there have been people who've lost everything, who don't have any family around, or they don't have friends. They are isolated and alone. So let's get back to these four temperaments. But I wanted to bring those up to you because I want to talk about them next week. But we'll go back to the four temperaments. We'll get that on the other side of the break and spend the rest of the program on the temperaments and about you. And even maybe we'll get into some different food choices for the different temperaments too, because those are also proposed in this modern world. I also want to talk about Hildegard van Bingham, who was a Christian mystic, an oddball, and an oddball like no other oddball, you know. I mean, really, she was a trip, but she was amazing. And she actually did some things with the four temperaments and the humors and all that. So we do not want to, we want to keep balance. If we can do anything, we can't change some of the craziness around us, but if we attempt to get in balance, and we attempt to children in balance, we're going to find a more balanced world. See you after the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. You can text, you can call 573-4BREAD-4 during our live broadcast, which is right now, Monday through Friday, 9 Pacific and 12 noon Eastern, and you all figure out the rest with Central and Mountain. So you're welcome to call anytime. You certainly can email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. All right. So yes. I know. I am saying I am not going to talk about these things, and I'll talk about them next week. And I spend half a show talking about them because they blow my mind. They blow my mind. They just do. I've watched them occurring. I'm not going to do, I promise Jennifer, I'm not going to go on for the rest of the program. But just let me tell you this. A lot of the things are not, they blow my mind when I read them. But but what I'd like to share with you, and I know you can relate to this experience, I've actually been watching this happen over a period of 20 years. Maybe even longer, where I catch a little article here, a little article there, and I think, that doesn't sound so great, but it doesn't sound so bad. But you somehow in your brain, it's like with a bad relationship, little red flags, and you think, don't get alarmed now. And then like you hear something else a few years later, the same thing, and it's like, well, wait a minute, this is progressing. But no, that's over there. That's in the Netherlands. That's never going to happen here. And then it's like, well, it's not just for the terminally ill. It's for the people with neurodevelopmental disabilities. And then the babies with the disabilities. And then now it's for people with mental illness. Now it is for, and then I will stop, I promise. But this is just a spoiler alert for next week. Now in the New York Times, basically what they're saying is that because in 2001, it was the first country in the world to euthanize and legalize euthanasia. OK, all right. I'm not going to do this, but let me just slip this part in. I'm like a little kid. I promise I'll go to bed in 5 minutes. And again, it has to go through a lot of people, and there are people who don't like it. But this is Edith Schippers, the health minister, read a letter to the Dutch parliament on Tuesday defending the measure. It is needed, she said, to address the needs of older people who do not have the possibility to continue life in a meaningful way, who are struggling with the loss of independence and reduced mobility, and who have a sense of loneliness, partly because of loss of loved ones, and who are burdened by general fatigue, deterioration, and loss of personal dignity. All right. Well, that just blows my mind, makes my hair uncurl. I just can't handle it. We'll talk about it next week. I want to so badly go back to it because it's so horrible. But you can look that up. It was on today's, it was October 13th. Was that today? No, it was yesterday, 2016, under health in the New York Times. Dutch law would allow assisted suicide for healthy older people. So that might be you. So, you know, I mean, there are days that might, have I lost my dignity? Oh boy, there are certain times I have. Have I had reduced mobility? I sure have. And sometimes I think, oh my gosh, it's because I'm getting older. And then 2 months go by and I heal and my sprained muscle's fine and I'm not as lonely and depressed and it's a nice day out. So which day do I pick to go and sign up? All right, that's it. Even Mozart's in here putting his hand on me, looking at me like, you said you would not talk about this. So, okay, Mozart, go lay down. You're a good boy. So that's I have a radio dog here. So temperaments, I was reading, and you know what? I think you let me know, DM live at breadboxmedia.com, because I, over the break, just as a fun aside, I was reading out of a book, The Four Temperaments by Randy Rolfe, R-O-L-F-E-J-D-M-E-N-T-S. MA, so she's a master's and a lawyer. And she wrote this book, and I was reading to Jennifer the kinds of food choices a melancholic type might need. And she was laughing and freaking out because she and I have both done completely the opposite. So let's reacquaint ourselves with the temperaments here really quickly. The four temperaments as described by Hippocrates and Aristotle and, oh gosh, the people before that. I think Avicenna, that was like a 980. No, that was, I'm sorry. No, that was after Christ. So we're talking about Galen. That was, he was after Christ too. So, Hippocrates was 400 years before Christ. And of course, Aristotle was before Christ as well. So, these humors, the melancholic, the phlegmatic, the sanguine, and the choleric, and they were corresponding to earth, water, fire, and air. The sanguine was the one, remember, that is lively, sociable, carefree, talkative, and that is more likely associated with air, lighter than air. The choleric, which is more about, it's associated with fire, the earth element of fire, and they tend to be egocentric, extroverted, excitable, impulsive. They can be aggressive, but that's when it gets more out of balance. They're the energetic, task-orientated, let's get it done, let's build empires or you know, big businesses, and they have a certain kind of they're good at planning, they're practical, they're solution oriented. So that's that. Melancholic is more traditionally associated with earth, deep, heavy, more introverted, sometimes cautious, but the depressed kind of susceptible to depression and moodiness. So you can be up and down, still be melancholic. Phlegmatic is more associated with water, and they're more inward and private, very stable, tend to have a rich inner life. They can be poets, that kind of thing. All these people can be all the above, but they tend to be steadfast and consistent. Sometimes they're the kind of the farmers, the, you know, just the somebody who's very steadfast and consistent. Perhaps they're not that dramatic. Now there are combinations, and you are definitely a combination. You're a combination of one or two, not just you have a combination of one, you are two or more. So you can be sanguine, melancholic, choleric, melancholic, phlegmatic, sanguine. There's a very large body out there that you can fit into, and you can fit into if you take all four of them and put them on a moving continuum, let's say like a wave, like water, you will see, just do that in your mind, the melancholic, sanguine, choleric, phlegmatic, and let each of them be on like a wave, like as if this was some kind of a children's show. And you see the words on the wave and you see them go up and down. You'll see that at times, and think of yourself, at times you are more talkative, sociable, carefree. At times you are more go-get-em, task-oriented, stay up all night to study for that exam, organized. Sometimes you dream or you can be prone to depression. Sometimes the phlegmatic, the stable, the steadfastness, you can be all the above, and you can also be very out of balance and be, you don't have to be all of them, but you can be very out of balance. Now, the reason that they are all, associated with elements is the concept and the notion of which our modern medicine is based, of the different elements, of the seasons and of the different elements. And the Christian mystic Hildegard von Bingen talked a lot about not just, and the soul. She talked a lot about the soul and God, and I haven't read all. I mean, she was prolific. I have barely just realized she was a Christian mystic, so she's got a whole lot of books. But I know that she was very big in food and combinations of food and herbs and all kinds of things. And she also talked about these balances. So she understood the temperaments. She understood how they can be affected by and come and go with, or some can come out more in others during different seasons. Well, just think now, seasonal affective disorder. We know a lot about that now. It's not just cold, gloomy winter problems. It can also happen at any time. We also know about other things that happen in the world that can traumatize us, change us a little bit, which will bring out or make more famous, let's say, one part of these temperaments over another. So, and then it tends to get us in the social aspect of a whole country, as we talked about before, that as a country, let's say, I would say that if we had to pick one of those that we value as a whole giant nation, the choleric. But we love our melancholics. We love all of them. We just love them in their own ways and places. Bob Dylan just got a Nobel Prize for literature. Why? Because of his unusual, massively prolific and beautiful writing. Whether you like Bob Dylan or you like the 60s or you live there or not, there isn't a musician alive now that has a more unusual style like him, who didn't utilize him as he utilized those before him. So we come back, we'll start tying some of this stuff together. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and we're walking this road together. We're having spoiler alerts, and we're having a little overviews of deeper subjects. We could do this for over a month. Maybe we can do a study if y'all let me know. DM live at breadboxmedia.com. If you'd like to do a more in-depth study of these four temperaments, because it is in fact, this book I'm telling you about, Randy Rolfe, not sure how she pronounces it. It's her book, The Four Temperaments, A Rediscovery of the Ancient Way of Understanding Health and Character. So yes, it's ancient, but it's not antiquated. It is not irrelevant. This is really good stuff. So, but you know, it helps to know a little bit about, you don't want to make it too simplistic. You don't want to make it too complicated. So, in fact, she has one thing I think is very interesting. And again, I also will talk about Hildegard of Bingen, because she is a Christian mystic and she was one of these out of this world type of people. And she certainly drew a lot from this. So, but this is kind of cool in this book. And then I want to read to you about some of the combinations from a different source. She says, on a much more serious note, consider the four versions of Jesus in the four Gospels of the Bible. In Matthew, Jesus has a commanding authority that others obey. And then she has in parentheses, choleric. In Mark, Jesus is a passionate but unappreciated helper to the people. She has in parentheses, melancholic. In Luke, Jesus is teacher and healer. She has in parentheses, sanguine. In John, he is the son sent on a mission of sacrifice, in parentheses, phlegmatic. It has been remarked that only with four Gospels could we get the full picture of Jesus' magnificence. It may be enlightening to consider that one reason Jesus remains so hard to pin down is because he offers a perfect balance with appeal to all temperament types. Isn't that just the coolest thing? I love that. What an insight. I'm all excited. What an insight is that? I got to read that again. On a much more serious note, because she's talking about actors and actresses before this, consider the four versions of Jesus in the four Gospels of the Bible. In Matthew, Jesus has a commanding authority that obeys, that others obey, choleric. In Mark, Jesus is a passionate but unappreciated helper to the people, melancholic. In Luke, Jesus is teacher and healer, sanguine. In John, he is the son sent on a mission of sacrifice, phlegmatic. It has been remarked that that only with four Gospels could we get the full picture of Jesus's magnificence. It may be enlightening to consider that one reason Jesus remains so hard to pin down is because he offers a perfect balance with appeal to all temperamental types. Well, that's a great sentence right there, because remember, it's about you and understanding you and being kind to you, because you have all four types in you. You just may be a little bit more one than the other, which is great, because if we were all just in perfect balance, maybe it would be peace on earth and it would be the kingdom of God right here. But we need to have everyone around us. We need the Bob Dylans, and we need the DeVries who did the first heart transplant, and we need the people that go to Mars, and we need the people, the actuarials and the accountants. We need them all. And one's not better than the other. When we start to value one way more than the other, then we start developing things like, sorry, I'm going to go back there, in the Netherlands, where we go, well, maybe because you don't have a life that's meaningful anymore, you can just go kill yourself. And I'm not minimizing anyone's struggle, because any of you who've been there, and if you are there now, get help now, because anyone who's been in a place where they're so down, so depressed, where they don't see, and I will tell you, I have had those experiences myself, where you don't see tomorrow. You just think, there's not that you're out of balance, just the same as if you couldn't eat for 6 days or something, and you didn't know why. It's you're out of balance. You need to be in balance. Things will look differently. Your life may not all of a sudden change, but it will look differently. So you need to understand that you flow in and out of temperaments, that you possess all these temperaments. What she said about the full complement of Jesus appealing to all types. It's not just how you are in the world to others, but how you should be to others, and how you should also be to yourself, to understand that you have these different combinations. So since this is the last segment of the last program of the week, let me send you off with just a couple of the combinations. These are the little combinations. This is from, it is from a Dr. Ekstrand, The Four Human Temperaments. It's from The Transformed Soul, which I don't know about the book. I haven't read the book, but this is just a little excerpt from it. He says, there are reasons for everything that we do as human beings, though it is often difficult for us to understand why we think like we think, feel like we feel, or act like we act in life. Many of the answers for human behavior can be found in people's temperaments or personalities. The study of the human personality goes all the way back to the famous Greek physician Hippocrates, 460 to 370 BC, the father of medicine. He was born during the prophetic ministries of Nehemiah and Malachi. Remember, we said that the other day. He was saying it now. Or some 450 years before the birth of Christ. Okay, so talking about these different dispositions. So let's see, let me get the combinations. And if we have time, we can go back and talk, get develop a little bit more of how, of his perspective. So here are some of the combinations, the sanguine. So if you have a sanguine personality and with, mixed with a choleric, maybe you, your children, your husband, your wife, your loved one, your coworker has this, sanguine choleric, he says it's the strongest extrovert of all the blends, because both primary types are extroverted. They are people-oriented, enthusiastic, with the resolutions of the choleric tempering and the lack of organization of the sanguine. He is almost always a sports enthusiast and is ideal in sales. He can talk too much and be obnoxious if threatened. Now he's doing it in the male. Just think about your own femaleness if that's part of you. They can be forgetful and maybe caustic sometimes, and maybe they can be hurtful without meaning it. That's a sanguine choleric. Now, sanguine melancholy. They're highly emotional people whose moods fluctuate from highs to lows. All right, now we're going to get close to the end here, and I will ask Jennifer to give me some pretty good cues here so that I can finish this up for you. So this, I'll kind of rush through them. We have the sanguine melancholy. They're emotional. They're highly emotional. They fluctuate. They are going from highs to lows. They can be very outgoing, but they can also be rather critical because they take things very deeply. They get down on themselves. They work really hard. They work with others quite well. Sanguine phlegmatic. They can be overpowering. But they can also be very gracious. So Anyway, the sanguine choleric, the sanguine melancholy, sanguine phlegmatic. So we're kind of looking in the sanguine with that being the predominant. So they can also, they balance each other out in that way. They don't really want to hurt anyone, but they can also fight back. So they can be very steadfast, but they can also be very dreamy and very outgoing. Choleric. The choleric and the sanguine, it's the second strongest extrovert in an active and purposeful individual. Fearless, high levels of energy, they're active, their brains are always going. And see, we need to know that could be you and it could be your loved one. When it starts to get out of balance, they can get to be angry and resentful. They may leave people shell-shocked and resentful because of the angry outburst. Choleric melancholic, very industrious and capable. So they got a high energy, but they've also very steadfast and keep their mind going. Their interpersonal relationships can be difficult due to hard to please nature, because they really can be the hard to please of the choleric because they're so driven, and yet that perfectionist part of the melancholy starts coming through too. Choleric phlegmatic is another one which has a subdued and of the outgoing temperament. So kind of still outgoing, but a little more subdued. We're not going to make it. I know I'm going fast. We'll take this up on Monday. But there are others. Let me just quickly give you the other two types of combinations, where the phlegmatic is the most predominant, phlegmatic sanguine, phlegmatic choleric, phlegmatic melancholy, and then the melancholy, melancholy sanguine, melancholy choleric, melancholy phlegmatic. So each one of these, see how it just twists? You can take all those four and twist them into where one is the predominant paired with another of the temperaments. And then that same secondary one, when it's predominant with one of them as its subordinate, you can see how the things are reversed. I'm going to go into this more next week because you will learn so much by this. I know I have. And we are going to open up the door to tolerance and acceptance and love. Have a wonderful weekend. We will see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.